your last name. It's Mitchell...
Szczepańczyk.
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 Third time's the charm. Szczepańczyk.
Mitchell.
Very good.
Okay, good. That's quite a name. Wow.
Thank you. I studied long and hard to try to get a name that creative and unique.
What's the good, the bad, and the ugly of digital technology and how it's affected our minds, our ability to learn and communicate? Joining me right now is Mitchell Szczepańczyk, host of a radio program, WHBK Radio.
Too often, broadcast radio insults your intelligence, but not here. This is radio that respects your intelligence and challenges you to think and rethink. Where knowledge is power, this is powerful radio. This is 30 minutes of information and inspiration. This is the Ministry of Truth. Hello and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Szczepańczyk. Some of the greatest victories in the history of social activism have been those in defiance of the market, the abolition of outright chattel slavery, the formal end of child labor, the establishment of a minimum wage, and the 8-hour workday. Even the most notable social activist movement of our time, Occupy Wall Street, is also arguably a defiance of markets. And yet, openly calling for the abolition of the institution of markets, indeed even articulating a critique as to their legitimacy, remains as taboo as any subject in our times. It's not because a case can't be made against markets. On the contrary, one can easily draw a list of indictments. Markets ignore externalities. Markets spur antagonism between participants. Markets spawn the most hated and the most powerful institution of our time, the limited liability corporation. The invisible hand, which has long served to justify markets, is better replaced with the invisible foot of their effects and problems. One big reason why this taboo still holds sway has been the long-standing absence of an alternative to markets, and the necessity for forging a viable and humane alternative. You can't fight something with nothing, writes Robin Hanel in his most recent book, Of the People, By the People, The Case for a Participatory Economy. For more than 20 years, Robin Hanel has advocated the anti-corporate, anti-market, anti-command planning model of economics known as PARECON, Participatory Economics, which he co-invented with Michael Albert of Z Magazine. In this episode of The Ministry of Truth, we'll discuss the book Of the People, By the People, and issues raised by it with the author, Robin Hanel, in the following interview recorded on Friday, December 14th, 2012. We are joined on the phone with Robin Hanel. Robin Hanel is a professor in the Department of Economics at Portland State University. He is the co-inventor of the economic model that is known as participatory economics, and he is the author of the new book, Of the People, By the People, The Case for a Participatory Economy, which is published by Soapbox Press, distributed by AK Press, and available in print and as an e-book. Robin Hanel, welcome to the show.
It's great to be on with you.
Let's talk a little bit about, in general terms, about the book, and maybe a couple minutes or a little bit more. Give a brief description, if you could please, about what the book is about and why you wrote it.
Well, the title, which people might recognize as coming from Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, the title is intended to convey a very, you know, important message, which is that unless the economy is both of the people and by the people, it's not going to end up being for the people. And that, you know, that's where the title comes from. As you know, the idea or model or vision of a participatory economy, which is really a rather concrete proposal about an alternative way to organize our economic activities, it goes back over 20 years now. Michael Albert and I originally published this sort of proposal about an alternative to capitalism back in 1991. So there were a couple of books written back then. Michael wrote a book called PARECON, Life After Capitalism, that I think came out in 2003. So in part, this is, you know, an update. We've heard a lot of things over the past 20 years, and, you know, therefore, there's lots to respond to. People, this model's been out there long enough so that various people have said, well, I like this part, but I'm worried about that part, et cetera, et cetera. So, in part, this book is simply, you know, the most up-to-date current response to things that people have said in the past. it's also mercifully short and jargon-free. And that's because it is primarily, which doesn't mean it's not very serious, that there isn't serious content. There is serious content, but hopefully it's presented in a brief, concise, and jargon-free way, better than it's been presented in the past. And it's intended, I mean, this is the post-Occupy moment, where what Occupy did in part, it did many wonderful things, but what, I mean, it pointed the finger at Wall Street and said, they're obviously the big problem. It pointed the finger at, you know, the last 30 years of income distribution, where the top 1% has gotten all the productivity gains in the world's economy, and the bottom 99% has been left to stagnate. But Wall Street also, you know, sent out a clear message that occupiers want, the Occupy Wall Street people, they want economic decisions to be made democratically. And they do that in their general assemblies. We did that in our general assemblies here in Portland. We still do that in our Occupy committees. But the big question remains, well, but can you make economic decisions democratically that are both effective and efficient, you know, for a whole economy? And that's what the model or the vision of a participatory economy has always been about. So part of the idea of having the book come out now is, well, now that people have once again said, here is our hope, tell us it's not impossible, then this is, you know, further work about how and why it can be possible.
I'd like to focus attention regarding, I guess, the receptivity of the model and maybe why some people may think, or at least my thinking is, you would think that a model like this that you would figure would help a lot of people in a lot of various efforts for a more just and humane economy and society, really, and maybe even the whole planet. Why it really hasn't caught on as some people may think it should have. So that's what I'd like to focus with you right now. Do you think that the progress of participatory economics, at least as far as its awareness and maybe even some small-scale implementation, is about now in 2012, almost approaching 2013, about where you would expect it when you and Michael Albert had first launched this proposal in 1991? You figure it's about where it should be 20 years hence or behind or ahead? What are your thoughts on that?
That's interesting to think back over what's happened over the past 20 years. We originally wrote it rather explicitly in response to a challenge that had come, you know, from a liberal, in European language, it's a social democratic economist, a rather famous one named Alec Nove. He wrote a book in 1983 that said, it's called The Economics of Feasible Socialism. And in his book, he said very clearly, it was a challenge. He threw down the gauntlet. He said, look, there are only two alternative ways you can run a modern economy. You either do it through the market system, or you do it through some form of command planning. There is no third way. That was his version of the TINA argument. There is no alternative. Margaret Thatcher made that famous when she was telling people in the United Kingdom, well, you don't like some of my reforms. You find them unpleasant, you know, that we're cutting back on this, we're cutting back on that. But, you know, in the end, there is no alternative. Well, that is always the ultimate defense of people who are defending the current system. The ultimate defense is, and when you think about it, there is no alternative defense. If you can't defend something on its merits, then what is there left to say except to try and convince people, no matter how awful it is, there is no alternative. And we believe that that is, that back in 1991, we believe that that is what had happened. That somehow people, that the campaign had been for a long, long time, to basically tell people who believed in what I think was the original vision of socialism going back to the 19th century, that, you know what, you're naive, it's impossible, and therefore you need to just accept something, you know, other than continue to dream. So that's where we started. And that was sort of a minimal project. We also thought that people who believed in a different kind of an economy, something like a participatory economy, had not done a very good job of spelling out exactly how all the decisions that have to be made in any economy, you know, could be made differently and why that could work. That instead, the people fighting for, you know, this kind of alternative to capitalism, they had mostly talked in very rhetorical, Pollyannish ways about how nice life would be if people behaved differently and things were different. And that's not the same as saying, here's a concrete proposal about how you could make these necessary decisions in a way that's better. So we thought we would also, you know, both answer Alec Nove and prove that there really was, you know, an alternative to command planning and market systems. And at the same time, we would provide, you know, some very concrete proposals and suggestions about how important economic decisions could be made. Originally, as you know, there were some groups of people in various cities in the United States and a few cities elsewhere who managed to get a hold of these books and say, wow, this really sounds good. And that goes back to the 90s, the mid-90s, the late 90s. You can remind me when it was I was out there in Chicago talking about this.
It was in 2005. I remember it very well. It was in the wake of the publication of your previous book, Economic Justice and Democracy. And by interest of disclosure, I should say that I had been involved in a group in Chicago, CAPES, the Chicago Area Participatory Economic Society, that had indeed organized an event at the University of Chicago, oddly enough, in their economics department, and had invited Robin Hennell to speak, and he graciously came to speak, and that was in 2005.
And at that time, as you said, there was a group of people, a group of you there in Chicago. There was a similar group in Vancouver, B.C. There was a similar group in New York City. There was a smaller group for a few years in Austin, Texas, of all places. Well, not Austin, but Texas. And part of what happened is those were people who became interested in this idea and saw it as an intellectual idea that was very attractive. And who realized that out there in movement circles, you know, nobody was aware of this and felt like this needs to be discussed as what do we want if we don't want communism anymore? What is it we want instead? Because people inevitably ask that question. Now, one of the things, and those groups died down. And I think there was a reason for that. In some ways, that's a very limited agenda to simply say, we have this idea for a future economy, an alternative to capitalism that we would like to talk about. I think those groups did a wonderful job of getting this idea out there in leftist circles as part of the debate. Now, on that score, a tremendous amount has happened. At this point in time, I know for a fact that when anybody talks about an alternative to capitalism, literally any place in the world right now, that the first thing that will be talked about is participatory economics or, you know, pair econ. There's an alternative. That's one of the proposals that's out there. I know that because whenever a left journal, such as Science and Society, runs, they decide to do a special issue on alternatives to capitalism, that I'm the first person they invite to say, well, we want you to be one of the people that submits something. Because they know that there is a larger audience amongst the left interested in this idea and some of these points, you know, larger than for some other sort of alternatives that are out there. So a tremendous amount of progress has been made on that front, and I would credit Michael Albert with having done a fabulous job of proselytizing, particularly, you know, in Europe and other places in the world. I was just on a two-week trip to England, Sweden, and Finland in September, and I was invited by people who, you know, are in favor of this kind of idea, who are not devoted only to sort of discussing this model and talking about it from an intellectual point of view, but who also now are immersed in sort of struggle activities, you know, in their countries and in their societies. And that just speaks to the fact that, you know, this model is now something that has a tremendous number of people around the world have heard of it, and I think that's for the good. My own view is that what really needs to happen, for some reasons we could talk about if you want to, what really needs to happen is we need to improve the quality of our discussion about how we would run things differently from capitalism. We need to improve the quality of our debate and discussion and understanding of what are the options, what are the pros and cons of, you know, doing things in different ways. As the quality of that discussion and debate improves, we will get more self-confidence that we as anti-capitalists have lost since the demise of communism. And I think that's also had a tremendous negative impact on the strength of our ability to fight for reforms. Sort of a loss of confidence that we really, really do know how to do things better than capitalism. I think that's what really, you know, is at stake. And I am very, I'm very encouraged. I'm frankly amazed. When I traveled in Europe and when I hear people calling me up and sort of asking me to speak on this subject, I'm amazed at this point at how much interest there is. And in part, it has been kindled again by Occupy. That says we want proposals about how to make economic decisions democratically. We don't want it done according to the old criteria, you know, profitability, corporations. No, that's not what we're interested in. We're interested in true economic democracy, and what does that look like, and how do you make it effective? There's a rekindled interest in that. So in that sense, I think that things would move very rapidly forward in the last 3 or 4 years.
Let's go into that discussion regarding improving the quality of the discussion, as you had mentioned just a moment ago. I'm thinking that one possible way to do that, and tell me what you think of this, would be to show in real life, in the here and now, an example or maybe small examples of how that could actually happen. I'm thinking along the lines, and I have to admit this is kind of coming from my own personal bias as having worked professionally as a software developer, writing computer programs all day long, that a computer program or even maybe these days something like an app for a smartphone that could somehow, I'm not even sure how this might even work, but just some kind of vague idea about some way for you to be able to input in your own particular work experiences, and it would be able to, as well as proposals, as the model would actually suggest, for what you might want a consumer produce, that might then be fed into some program that might actually serve as an intermediary along the lines of what a participatory economy model might actually require if that were to propose a working example. And then once you have something like this and it can be shown as an example of, look, here's something that works, you can then go to other skeptics and perhaps even other presentations and say, look, we've got something that is a tangible example of not how this model that began as a theory in a book is now actually being lived in some admittedly small way, but nonetheless tangible example in real life. What are your thoughts regarding an example like this or other similar examples?
I think one of the things that's very encouraging, and I'll tell you, the author who writes very extensively about this, speaks about this, is very knowledgeable about this, and people should read on this, his name is Garel Peretz. He wrote one of the blurbs for the new book of the people by the people. And people around him call it the new economy. And what he points out is that below the radar, where it's not visible in the sort of public eye to a great extent, you actually see sort of a rapidly growing, you know, part of our economic activity that is really quite different from the giant corporations, you know, owned by stockholders, you know, driven by profit. But these things are going on in local situations, they're not even aware of how much they have in common with what is going on in other local situations. These are things like the revival of community development corporations, in cities where the collapse of funding, you know, from federal and state governments for cities, you know, has created the need, you know, for simply pulling up by the bootstraps and doing for ourselves. So you have cities, you have community development corporations going on in a whole bunch of places. You've got more and more worker-owned co-ops. You've got more and more consumer co-ops, locally supported agriculture. You've got things like community development banks. A lot of this activity is going on. And what it has in common is to say, it has two things in common. And these are the ways that we demonstrate that this kind of decision-making, that is popular democratic decision-making about important economic decisions, is possible and it works. It is the criteria for making decisions is, well, it's not a bottom line. We are looking at, you know, social usefulness. We're looking at job creation in communities with high unemployment rates. That's more important than the profit line on whatever it is that they're doing. So it's a change of criteria. It's a different set of criteria, and it's a different approach, too. Well, who makes these decisions? Are they made democratically by people, or are they being made by the owners of corporations? And that is a lot of that is going on. I think that's how you demonstrate in the here and now that people are capable of making their own decisions. And I think we're getting a lot more successful demonstration of that. At the same time that it's becoming, the other side is demonstrating their total incompetence to a greater and greater extent. Look at the people who are running the world, you know, the people who are running the world now are doing an increasingly obvious, miserable job of it. They are not doing anything to address the great crisis of our time, which is climate change. They're not even doing anything effective to address, you know, financial reform and the tremendously high unemployment rates in all of the advanced economies that aren't going away. So when you look at elite decision making through the neoliberal capitalist system, what you see is increasingly ineffective, greedy, ineffective, and careless decisions. And what you see in the new economy is ordinary people making much, much better decisions and doing much, much better at accomplishing the things that need to be done. Agar Alperovitz is willing to write a blurb for this for the new book because he realizes that at some point in the end, you need a different way of coordinating the new economy. That as long as these co-ops and these development corporations are all floating out there in a competitive market system, there's a limited amount they can accomplish. They're constantly struggling with the conflict between sort of social serviceability criteria and commercial viability. And what a participatory economy contains as a long-term proposal is a way of systematically facilitating all of the elements of the new economy so that they can really accomplish and flourish rather than constantly be having to battle against sort of the competitive dynamics in the market system.
With the 5 or so minutes that we have remaining, I'd like to change the topic a little bit to another realm that's kind of connected to these matters related to, I guess, the taboo with regards to markets, or especially critiquing markets. You had mentioned earlier the saying that Margaret Thatcher would always foist up against criticism, TINA, there is no alternative, abbreviated TINA. And yet I'm thinking that it held such power mainly because it dealt with that, and it's kind of still resonates, even if people have never heard that term, regarding the taboo, not only regarding, I guess, replacing markets or with some humane alternative, but the very idea about critiquing the legitimacy of markets. And I see that today even among progressive left and liberal political commentators and even activists today in the United States. I'm thinking that one critical component to help to move this whole agenda forward would be to help to try to break that taboo. And I'm wondering if in maybe a few minutes you might be able to lend some thoughts regarding what it might take to help to do that. Maybe the fact that, as you had mentioned, some of those elite power circles are doing an increasingly bad job, they may actually inadvertently be helping our cause by doing that bad job.
If you go back to the 90s, the dominant opinion amongst progressive economists was exactly the one that Alec Nova expressed. That and that certainly got reinforced by the demise of communism. That well, there really are, that there is no democratic planning. Any kind of seriously participatory democratic planning is impossible. And an excellent example of that. I mean, and most of my radical economist friends were of that opinion, and their reaction to participatory economics was basically, we just don't believe that you can really have a non-market system. Yes, you could have command planning, we know that, but if we're not in favor of that, we really think you're stuck with a market system. Eric Olin Wright, I don't know if you know who he is, he's a sociologist, very well-known sociologist, he's taught for 30 years up at the University of Wisconsin. He is currently the president of the American Sociology Association, and he recently contacted me and said, you know, let's engage in some sort of online discussion debate about, you know, what he proposes is a kind of market socialism. And market socialists have always been very dismissive of participatory economics, you know, in the past, really on the grounds we just don't think it's really possible, you know, to have participatory planning. And he has approached me and said, look, let's talk more about this, because I am increasingly aware that a market system is difficult to tame, and I'm increasingly interested in thinking about whether or not there really is an alternative. So I do think that, you know, there's movement in the direction, and what it's been driven by is the, you know, incredibly abysmal performance of the global market system. The taboo comes from the people who don't want us to think there's an alternative to the way things are now. And yet, people increasingly are coming to the conclusion that the results of this, you know, are increasingly abysmal and unacceptable. And I think that's driving progressive economists, you know, in the direction of actually thinking more seriously about challenging this taboo. That we cannot do without markets, as much as they may be problematic, we really just have to grin and bear it and put up with them. And that's a big part of what is in the proposal and has always been in there about participatory economics. It's an alternative to command planning and to market.
We've been speaking with Robin Hanel. He is a professor in the Department of Economics at Portland State University. He is the co-inventor of the economic model that we've been discussing called participatory economics and author of the new book, Of the People, By the People, The Case for a Participatory Economy, distributed by AK Press, published by Soapbox Press, and available in print as well as an e-book. Robin Hanel, thank you so much for joining us.
It was great being on with you, and good luck to everybody there in Chicago.
Listen to all past episodes of the Ministry of Truth online at www.szcz.org. That concludes this episode of the Ministry of Truth. Special thanks to Mario and the staff of WHPK Radio in Chicago. Thank you for listening.